we're having an interview right now in a $70 billion market, right? This is one of the greatest recession resilient markets ever in franchising or business. Hair grows, it has to get cut. All right, welcome back to The Pursuit of Profit. Today's guest didn't set out to open a barbershop. He set out to build an experience where music, vibe, and authenticity collide. In 1999, Paul O'Brien and his brothers launched Floyd's 99 Barbershop, breaking away from discount chains and high-end salons to create something in between, the expert cuts with a rock show vibe. Fast forward to today, Floyd's has grown to 150 units sold nationwide with a very impressive item 19, showing $979,000 in average revenue and $180,000 in EBITDA, reflecting an impressive 18% net margin. It's proof that when you focus on culture and consistency, the numbers will follow. We'll dive into how their largest franchisee scaled 30 locations, why culture trumps convenience, and what it means to lead with empathy in a people-first business. All right, let's get into it. So I happen to love this space, by the way. I do. I love the edgy vibe. I love the culture. I love what you're building, the interior. What you've done with the wall coverings and the artwork and the music connection is really cool. I love the vibe. So my question's this. Before the first location ever opened, I want you and the boys to go back to the beginning. What was the vision in your heads, right, for Floyd's? Were you trying to reinvent the barbershop? What was the logic? How did you get to this vibe that you created?
You know, at that time when we started, you know, back when we were putting the concept together in 1999, there were a lot of the old school barber was dying out. And then the other option was really the family cuts, you know, the super cuts, great clips. They were really dominating the market. Mm-hmm. And then there was really nowhere in between. And we felt like that was missing. And so with Floyd's, what we did is we did want to create a place that had a vibe, a place you'd want to hang out, a place that kind of spoke community. And so we just wanted to create that environment that you could feel that and a place you want to be.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I echo everything you're saying. As an investor, as a franchise consultant, I love following the spending habits of each generation. My parents' generation, my generation, the next generation, the current youthful generations, they're going to barbershops. They want experiential. They're not going to budget cuts. They're not going to Fantastic Sam's. They're heading over to you. Plus, we live in a time where everyone has a beard. Where are you getting that maintained? You're not getting that maintained at Supercuts.
Right.
So what are you seeing, like, demographically, your customer, like, what are you seeing in the marketplace that's really driving your success?
Well, I think you just said a lot of it. I think what we're doing is we spend a lot of time and money and in training and keeping up with trends, being able to provide a lot of services. So we're Floyd's for everyone. And that means whether you're a, you know, a 35-year-old business guy on the go, or you're a, you know, 12-year-old kid, or a, you know, 65-year-old female grandmother, we can take care of you. And we work hard to do that and keep our skills going and offer training. It's really important to offer the training, because the stylists and barbers that you want to work for you are the type of artists that are thriving to get better, who want to learn.
There is no doubt. If there's a barber, what is the opposite? Do we just refer to them as hairstylists?
Well, they're unique, but there's a lot of similarities there. So there's plenty of, like, you know, cosmetologists are typically, they can do a lot of the same stuff the barbers do. And it depends what state they are in. There's different requirements in certain states that allow them to, you know, do a face shave as a cosmetologist. They might not have that separation so much between the two. A lot of time, the cosmetologists have a little more experience in being able to do color, able to probably perfect more long layer style haircuts, more, a lot of our women. So the cosmetologists do that. The barbers have a lot more clipper work, design work, fading, things of that nature.
Okay, interesting. Okay, I like the differentiation. All right, I get it. Like straight razor shaves, that can't be done at Great Clips. Like, you have to be licensed and trained to do that.
Exactly.
And only a barber, my understanding, only a barber can handle that type of work.
Right. And we, and in our shops, we have a demographic of different stylists and barbers that work in this. So we're not just barbers only. We actually have some, we have cosmetologists and barbers okay. working together. So not every single person in a Floyd's is a barber.
Okay. Most people don't get the full story when they start exploring franchising. So they make mistakes that cost them big. That's why my business partner, Justin Guevara, and I wrote Beyond the Brand, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Fearless Franchising. It is our proven six-step process at Phrenosity to help you find the right franchise, avoid costly pitfalls, and build a business that truly fits your goals. Grab your copy of Beyond the Brand on Amazon or any major book retailer and start building your future fearlessly. In your marketing material, your team, you always say it's for everyone. And I like that. I like that there's no barrier to entry. It's like, who are you? Anyone could come in here. This is not just for men. But what is that mix of business, honestly? Are you heavily weighted male? Are you 20%? Like, what's the mix of business between men, women, and children?
Yeah, it does vary in our, you know, what cities we're in and whether we're a suburb shop, we're kind of a downtown urban shop. When we get out to the suburbs a little bit more, we definitely see a lot more children in our shops. And then we tend to see, we actually skew a little more male, actually, as we're some of our urban in the, you know, like in the downtown Denver where we're from. We're going to find a little more, we're actually going to find less children, as you might expect. But our demographic kind of opens up a little bit more. We actually will see some more females in our more urban settings.
Interesting. Okay. So as a percentage, men, general terms, if you want to use suburbs, that's fine. Like, what are we looking at?
I would say I'd probably say we're kind of in the low 80s% men.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Another thing about barbershops that I thought was cool, and I would like for you to comment on this. When other competitors came out, they had this thing, which is come in, you're going to get your barber. Would you like a glass of beer, a glass of wine, a can of beer? My understanding is you don't do that. What was the logic? How do you feel about it first as an offering?
We do not offer it. And I think that for us, you know, actually, you know, we haven't had to actually. And I think that the thing is, you know, we're operating in, I think, 13 states now. So some states allow it, some don't allow it, alcohol in the barbershop. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us, one of the reasons we chose not to do it is that bringing in alcohol in the workplace, that can create a lot of different problems also. And then, you know, when we say we're for everyone, you know, we do have a lot of children that come in there and we have a lot of people that, you know, maybe aren't, you know, that's not their scene. That's not their thing. So, and then another thing is, you know, bringing alcohol into the workplace, then that creates another issue with your employees. We have competitors that do that. I think it works for some. We would probably, as many people that come to Floyd's because they could get a beer, probably turn away some people that don't think that's the place that needs to happen.
Because I know you guys own a lot of locations, right?
We do. Yeah.
Wait, talk to me about that. How many do you actually own? Because I heard it's a lot.
Well, we're right now, we're about 60% corporate to franchise. But, you know, 5 years ago, we were 80%. So we are moving more into the franchise. We're becoming more of a franchise brand. And that's intentional. So I believe we're at the little over 150 something shops here. And, you know, we're, like I said, we're probably in the 60% corporate, and that's, you know, we're committing a lot more to franchise, and I'm sure we'll talk about that.
That's impressive. I like that.
Yeah.
I love brands that eat what they cook and they're in the trenches with the franchisees. They're experiencing the same issues that the franchise community is experiencing versus this disconnect where it's like, we don't own locations at the brick and mortar level. Like, you're experiencing this? Experiencing what? There's always that disconnect. It irritates me. So I love when you keep your finger on the pulse as a franchisor and stay in the game. I think it's really healthy.
Well, we have to, you know, we have to be experts at this. Our franchise partners really count on that from us.
There was a comment made about retaining employees at a rate 2 times the industry averages. What did you mean by that? Like, how are you doing that?
Our deal is that, you know, we are a family business. And I think that's really helped us to get where we are. And the success of our company has been the family, 3 brothers and my wife, who has actually, my wife, Karen, who's been there since the beginning, is our current president right now in this company. And what we do is we just take that mentality to each shop. And it's bringing in that, you know, making sure the leader, our shop manager, our leadership team in each shop is providing a great environment, creating a place that they want to work, our employees want to work in. And it is a lot of work to do that, but it's very important to our core that we can create that, because like you just said, in our industry, they bounce and they don't, you know, and they're very emotional, and, you know, the grass is greener every day for a lot of people. And we just really try to make our shops sticky, keep them wanting to be there, listening to them, you know, keeping the environment fresh, keeping it fun. And that's really been a big part of our success.
That's great. That's great. What's with the radio programming? What did you guys do there? It sounds pretty cool.
Well, we used to, you know, when we first started back in, you know, we opened our first shop in 2001, February 2001. But, you know, in the old days, we, you know, we were just playing music out of the shop, and it, you know, it was playing CDs, you know, put a CD track in there, and, you know, just kind of the rotating CD track. And then that became an issue with quality. It came to, you know, the person, you know, our front desk, person running the front desk was kind of listening to what they want to hear. And so we were fortunate to work with a company called Custom Channels out of Boulder, which is, you know, local to where we're from. And we just started creating our own music where they, you know, we have our own radio station. And, you know, we've had that quite a while. I mean, we've had that at least, I'm going to say, wow, we've got to be coming, you know, 18 years, somewhere in that range of having that. And I think we were, you know, I think at that time, I think, you know, Muzak was a thing. But this was really cool because they were really good of creating the vibe of Floyd's for us by the music, what time of day it was, what's playing, what's happening that day, you know, keep it fresh. You know, I think one of the things when we would hear back from our stylists and barbers is that when we were early on, it was just like, you know, hearing the same music over and over. And you know, that kind of made them a little soggy. I got to be honest with you.
Well, music moves us emotionally. There's no doubt about it. I like that. So you're constantly mixing it. The music in a environment like a gym, and it's funny you bring up Muzak. Are they still around? They can't be.
I don't think so. I haven't heard. Right. I haven't. Yeah, I would imagine they're not.
We used them in the gym business a long time ago for the royalty-free playlist. And I'm sure you're doing the same thing, royalty-free. You're not paying royalties on this stuff.
We're paying, the company we're paying, you know, we pay for the service, but they're paying the artists or however that is paid up.
Let's go through some of these services. We keep talking about all the great things that they do. Where is the revenue in the business? Cuts and fades, is that 50%, right? Barbering, we talked about beard trims and head shaves and straight razor. Where are the services? Where is the money in a Floyd's?
Well, I would say that really the money is definitely what we, you know, a regular men's haircut, or, you know, that's 85% of the business for us. It is, you know, the specialty services for the, you know, the beard trims and I mean, they fall under 20% in those specialty services. But the fact that, you know, we can do them is unique that we're able to do that.
Interesting. So, everything, I mean, 85% is just cuts. So everything under that, the barbering, the shampooing, the styling, the blowouts, the coloring, the waxing, all of it is single digit percentage of revenue. Man, I don't think I would have guessed that. 85 is a big number.
I think the thing is that what we do is, you know, we market ourselves like, you know, that we can do all those services, but, you know, for our franchisees and, you know, about, you know, our system, our shops being able to do what they do, the definitely what we call the Floyd's cut, that's our, you know, haircut, shampoo, typical service, in and out, 30 minutes. That's our bread and butter.
Okay.
And we could do all the other services. And I would say that what we do get a lot is just like goatee cleanups with the men's, you know, the men's haircut. And that's an added service.
Okay.
But it's really, that's the bread and butter. We find that there's a lot more clients out there that want to book a time, come in and out of the door, 30 minutes, feeling like $1 million. That's it.
I agree with you. I don't want to be in the business with the whiskey. And this brings me to my next question, because this is the stigma with a barbershop, is you're going to pay a premium over what you usually get. What is the average ticket? If you're all things to all people, what is that average ticket?
Well, our average ticket in a shop, if I had to do a blended average for our work, because, you know, it's a little more in LA than it is in Denver, but we're probably like a $39, $38 ticket average.
Okay.
And where we positioned ourselves, I'll go into this a little bit more, where we positioned ourselves, and it's true from the first day we started our business, there was a lot of competition with the, I like to call it the budget cut players. And I respect what they do. There's a market for that. And they're, you know, that's what they are. And they serve a purpose for sure. And then there was kind of the full service salon. And, you know, when we go back to, it's interesting when we molded our concept together, myself and my brother, Rob was more the supercut guy. I'm going to get a haircut. I'm going to go now. I'm going to spend $12 for a haircut back in 1999. I was the salon guy.
Okay.
I went to go see Michael. I was spending $35 in 1999 for a haircut. I made an appointment, which you actually had to call up and they wrote it in a book, the old school way. And I really do think that we were two different consumers. And I think that we could look at, when we were looking into, you know, doing something different, coming into this industry, I think those two, you know, us being two different customers kind of helped us figure out, wow, there's nobody doing something right in the middle. It's either you're going to go one end or the other end. It's either I'm going to go do the $12 haircut, I'm going to go do the $35 to $50 haircut where I had to make an appointment. And we just landed right in the middle. And that was intentional.
I like that. Yep. Like you said, Roosters 18-8. And then you're saying, where is this underserved market? I think it was smart. And I think it has a lot to do with your success as a brand. Just for the audience, because we keep bringing up like the budget cuts, right? And you're right. There's a place for everyone. Like, do you want to be in that business? It's kind of in and out. It's non-experiential. There is nothing exciting about the interior of a Supercuts. It's incredibly right. boring. It's nearly a sterile environment. You know, Great Clips has these like little sailboats. They look like sails, yeah. right? When you go mm-hmm. in there. But just for the audience, we're having an interview right now in a $70 billion market, right? This is one of the greatest recession resilient markets ever in franchising or business. Hair grows, it has to get cut. It has built-in recurring revenue. You don't have to ask the customer, would you like to join a membership and come back every month so I can make a living? They're, as soon as they leave the shop, the hair starts growing already. And it's right. just an amazing recurring revenue business model. Everyone listening can relate to this. What was the first thing you wanted to do after COVID? Get a haircut. That's what everybody right. wanted. Everyone wanted to get a haircut when COVID ended. It's like, we're free to leave our house. You're free to go to your local business and be within 2 feet, 1 foot of another human being. Please get me a haircut. So it's one right. of those businesses, but just a level set. Let's just pick a brand like Great Clips. 4,400 salons across US and Canada. There are 700 franchisees. Why do I, as an investor and a consultant, love the hair care space? It's because of the multi-unit ownership. You will not find an industry with more multi-unit owners than hair care. So think about just Great Clips and Supercuts experiences. So I love this space. Now, do I love the budget cut? Not nearly as much as I love a Floyd's, because when you walk into Floyd's, you will all understand what we're talking about right now. It is the definition of experiential. And that is what I'm Gen X. That's what Gen Z, Gen Y, Echo Boom, millennials, that's what they want. They want an experience and you're providing it. And I love that you're doing it for everyone and not just men, because I'm less interested in that. I think that you hit the sweet spot. I really do.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. How are you acquiring customers? And before you get into this, I want to say something. Doing as many deals as we've done in the hair care space, this was a recurring theme. And I want to know if you echo this. This is what people tell me. I go, how are you guys getting to 6 locations on average? And a lot of people would say this to me. When we interview stylists, one of our questions is, where are you now? And they respond, I'm 3 miles down the road. Okay, how long have you been doing this? 20 years. Do you have a book of business? Oh, I've got a great following. Do you think your great following book of business will follow you 3 miles, 5 miles down the road to Floyd's in this example? Absolutely. I think I could bring in a minimum of 30, 40, 50 grand a year in revenue. Is this true that when you enter the hair space and you hire people with a book of business, they instantly start driving revenue to your location, helping you break even and scale faster? Is there truth to this methodology?
There's definitely truth to it. I would say that definitely there's truth. And I think that we do at Floyd's when somebody's transitioning from their other shop to a Floyd's and their client comes, you know, that comes in to try this new place with Sarah. You know, they followed Sarah to Floyd's. They might not even heard of us. I'd say that typically they have a great experience and they love the move. Not only that, we've had stylists that have come to us because their clients have said, you need to go work at Floyd's. I want to see you, but I want to see you in a Floyd's. We've had that happen quite often where we've actually, the stylist sought us out because their clients were basically saying, why are you working here? You need to go over there, because they have friends that go there and they know that, you know, there's maybe a better opportunity for them over there. So we've had that. I would also say that we do, it is, you know, retaining clients from other shops, but also it's overstated at times. Sometimes we'll hire people and they have this massive book and we don't quite see that, but we, you know, we definitely see clients that come in.
I mean, how else do you explain this multi-unit ownership? I think it's great. I love it. I love that concept. There's not a lot of businesses that you can interview someone and ask them about the book of business and can they bring in some revenue? I mean, there's just not a lot of businesses like that where you hire employees and all of your people are employees, right? You're not renting chairs.
No, we're all W-2 employees. And we can get into that a little bit here. We're seeing some opportunity that with that. Now with the no tax on tips coming out now, I think it's an opportunity. It's a calling for us to say, hey, it's time to come out of the underground and come up here now. Pay your taxes. You're getting your tips free. That's coming. You know, you're going to benefit from that. But you know, where's your health insurance? Where are you paying Social Security? Where's your credit score? How are you going to buy something? You know? So we really believe that we're going to get some wind behind our backs here. And we're working on, as we're learning how the law is coming in to play. And we worked really hard. Actually, our president, Karen O'Brien, she worked with really locked arms with Great Clips, Sports, you know, some of the bigger brands and really lobbying the local senators to make sure that we were part of that. And a lot of people in our industry worked hard on that. And we're very grateful for that. But we do think that for the, you know, for brands like ours, this is going to be a benefit because there is going to be a benefit to come up and get the benefits of working for a company like ours instead of just really going underground and, you know, maybe, you know, working under the table more.
That's smart. I like that. I mean, the benefits of being self-employed are all about tax efficiencies. Well, guess what? You're getting the tax efficiencies of an entrepreneur by being a W-2 employee with no tax on tips. You don't need to create expenses to offset income. It's already offset. I mean, not all of it. I don't know what the code. I think it's like the first $15,000 or $25,000 in tip income.
I think it's $25,000.
Yeah.
But you know, but they're making the commission plus that tip tax free. There'll be some education. And like I said, we're marketing that language. We're really learning what it is. And then I do believe that's going to be, you know, that's going to be real beneficial for us because, you know, let's face it. You know, we're here post COVID. A lot of people didn't make it.
I know it.
You know, and, you know, we went through 2008 and we're like, wow, our business grew significantly through the problems of the whole, what our country went through in 2008 through the whole mortgage, you know, that whole deal. And we came out the other side. We grew our business and we were like, wow, we were promoting to, you know, in our industry to potential clients. I mean, potential franchisees, we were talking a lot, we're recession proof. Well, I can say we're pandemic proof because my gosh, we made it. It wasn't easy. Unfortunately, some big brands didn't make it through. A lot of different franchise groups, they didn't make it through.
Yeah.
And we did. And I'm really proud of that. And let me tell you, we worked really hard and we're real excited about the position we're in right now. What we learned through that whole process too, we learned a lot. And now we're really looking forward to where we're going to be in 3 to 5 years.
Love it. Yeah, you guys are moving. I want to go back to the employees because that's one of my next questions is understanding the staffing model. If I walked into a Floyd's right now, like what is the average number of employees at least to achieve? Let me say this, to achieve the earnings claim, if I wanted to do $1 million a year in this business, how many people do I need cutting hair to achieve $1 million top line number?
I would say you'd probably need somewhere in the range of 16 stylist barbers on staff. And I would say that probably about 70% of them would probably need to be full-time. Full-time is what we call 32 hours.
Okay.
So that's really, I would say that's a real healthy shop that could, you know, that could go and get the ROI of $1 million shop, which we're proud of because
and they're all
not
in
a lot
there?
Of people in ours.
They're all in there lined up at the same
not
time?
One. No.
Okay, let's clarify that, because this happens a lot with brands where they tell me, you're going to need around 35 employees. I'm like, whoa, time out. You're only having 8 on payroll at the same time. So who of that superset of employees, which I get, how many are usually on payroll at the same time? Because you're working shifts.
Yeah, and that's it depends what time of the day, where the shop is and all that, because you know, if we have a suburb shop, okay, a suburb shop, we're going to see a lot more evening, weekend, more of the urban space, more of a downtown space. It might be a little more even flow through the day. So I would say that typically the most you're going to see on the floor in a shop at a time is 10 people, typically.
Okay.
That's going to be the higher end of that. Our footprint is about 10 to 12 chairs in a shop. And so that's really what that is. But really, one of the key things for us is scheduling, is neighborhood and scheduling it right, but being proficient at that and really I think that when we went through COVID, a lot of habits changed. And now the corporate America, everyday people, we're back to our normal life. And I know we're talking about COVID, you know, COVID happened 4 years ago now or whatever. But, you know, we know a lot of people work from home still and they're not coming back. More have come back. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that we've had to do is to continually change our staffing at the times. You know, it's kind of been a revolving door for us, but changing and to make sure we're meeting the needs of what clients want and really educating our styles why that is. Because you know, what happened was, is that we went into COVID, we did become a 9-to-5 business. We shortened the hours up. We went to, you know, and that's not what our brand was.
Right.
Now we're back to pre-COVID services, shop hours. And now what we've done is we've had to move, you know, work with our stylists and barbers to get them back to working when our clients are demanding the service.
Okay. You're 7 days a week?
We are 7 days a week in most of our shops. We have a few shops here and there. We might have some outliers where we're not open on a Sunday, depending on, you know, if that center is a complete, you know, A, if we're allowed to not be open on Sunday, and B, if it's an area where it's just, you know, some in like our tech center areas where it's a lot of traffic from the business people
employees
will tend to maybe not have it open or very reduced hours.
Okay, got it. How many, when you talk about 10 to 12 chairs, what is the square footage average of a Floyd's?
I would say the average, if I had to have the sweet spot, it's about 1,200 to 1,400 square feet of a shop.
All right,
we
can
be super, super creative with that. We can, you know, we can squeeze down the 900 square feet. Is there, you know, are there bathrooms in our shop or is there a common area bathroom area? We can, you know, we take each shop as a unique challenge. Sometimes we've been fortunate enough to get a great space, you know, like I can think of a spot we have in Fairfax, Virginia, if you know Fairfax, super high rent district, but there was this shop that sat under a really busy retail area near parking, which was huge to us. But this shop had so many pillars in it that there was just a lot of pillars in this 1400 square feet shop. Well, we went in and we really worked around the pillars and did some creative stuff with them, like wrapped a lot of the pillars with artwork. We kind of, you know, instead of not just being, you know, the straight line shop, it was a bunch of little nooks and crannies and things like that. But we made it feel Floyd's and it was cool to do that. And we got a heck of a shop for a really good deal doing that. So what we do is we take each shop, what opportunity it gives us to make it creative, because it's not just this rubber, you know, it's not just this, okay, here we go. This is the same shop. Every shop is different to us.
I like that.
And has its opportunity for creativity for us.
Absolutely. Right. Here's my canvas. It's got a lot of, it sounds like a lot of support beams in there for whatever was above it with all these columns.
It was under a hotel. But at the same time, you know, we go back to our franchisees. We want to hear from them. What we'll do is we might draw up 4 layouts and say, this is how we see it. This is our favorite. This is 1, 2, 3, 4. What do you think? What do you like? Well, I like 1, but could we do this?
Yeah.
We are really attentive to do that. And, you know, a lot of times we're like, hey, you tried that. That didn't work. No, this is why that wouldn't be ideal. But sometimes we learn something from our franchisees. I mean, a lot of times. Yeah. So we're really open to that. And, you know, we have our largest franchise partner group is out of Dallas and they're great. And they, we're with a third group now that has purchased that. And the other groups have done so well. You know, sometimes when a new group buys another group out, it's because maybe it didn't work out. It was the opposite. They did so well that they were able to sell their franchises for an awful lot. But each time I feel like that with the new ownership coming in, we've learned a lot from them and our other franchises as well.
How many do they own? It sounds like a large group.
My gosh, I think they're probably in the mid-30s now.
Really? In one city?
They're in Dallas, Fort Worth. They're in Fayetteville, Arkansas, Oklahoma City, and Houston. We're just getting going. So I think we're about four shops into Houston now. So they're definitely our biggest partner.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and they got quite a team. And so we work really well with them. And they've just done a great job of making Floyd such a unique brand in Texas and in Arkansas. And you know what's really cool is like Fayetteville, Arkansas is, you know, college town, college driven city. And they went in and, you know, we identified that's a one, maybe two shop market for Floyd's, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, we want to achieve these $1 million AUVs. We don't, you know, our thing is like, we want to grow it right. But we don't want to create so many that you're tripping over one of Floyd's to go to another one. We want them to be unique. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't want to water down the talent and water down what we're doing. We want each one to be special. But they just crushed it right out of the gate. Why did they crush it? Because so many kids from Dallas go to Arkansas.
Okay.
And they were like, instantly, they knew our brand. And I mean, Dallas, that whole region is probably half the school. So we really benefited from that right out of brand recognition.
That's great. You want to talk about this? Oh, let's talk about the item 7 first. I want to get into the item 19. It's super impressive. What the investment range was pretty wide. It was $399.5 to $762.5. What are you seeing on average to open a Floyd's within the square footage we discussed?
I would say it's probably a lot closer to the $350 to $400 in that range.
Okay.
Because we have... Now, you know, the thing is that, you know, when you're looking at the 700,000 shop there in that, that's more the Taj Mahal. We're not looking at building those anymore as much. That's okay. Not really our sweet spot of the model. So the bigger shops, we have some big shops. We have some franchises with big shops. We just think it really, we don't think that's not the future for us. Our future is to get these things open, you know, under 400 grand would be, you know, get these shops open and running. And that's really where our focus is. And we're focusing more on that as we're shifting to a franchise company. You know, when we were our own corporate company, we could, you know, we took some risk and, you know, we would build a, you know, a 20 chair shop. And we have a few of those that do well for us, but we do know that is not, that's not us moving forward.
Yeah. Smart. You got to tighten it up, right?
Yep.
You just keep optimizing and eking out operational efficiencies. Jack up your, you know, EBITDA, keep the rent low, keep the construction low. It's like, okay, we could do this for $350,000-$400,000. It's not necessary to have 20 chairs. We could make a great living with 12.
Well, just to add on to that, I don't want to get ahead of myself here with you, but I would say since we're talking about the construction of the build out, I'll tell you that, you know, yes, it is more than our competitors, a Great Clip Supercut. It might be almost twice as much, but we have developers seeking us out. They want us. They want to have the Floyd's. And we've really benefited from that. We've benefited from getting really good square foot rent because, you know, somebody comes in, you know, they either build a new center that's going to be hot and sexy. It's the Whole Foods anchored. It's going to have the cool things. They want something. It's important that they're bringing in stuff that is, you know, brings the vibe they're looking for.
To the strip mall. When you say developers, you're talking about the strip mall.
Yeah.
The landlords.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Exactly.
20 years ago. 20 years ago, the landlord would have said to you, a barbershop? I thought they were like closing all over America, like shoe cobblers. It's like, you're not understanding demographic trends, man. We're back. Barbershops
exactly.
are back. And landlords didn't even get it 2 decades ago. Now I love it. Now, we're not saying anyone listening is going to get TI money. You may get zero. But I am curious what the TI package was, which is tenant improvement money given to you from the landlord for making a capital improvement in their space. Sounds like an attractive TI package. What was it?
Well, that specific one are you asking or just in general?
Yeah, the Vernon Hills
one. I can't remember. You know, I just knew it was more per foot than we were used to. And especially, you know, I knew it was going to definitely, you know, help us in, you know, in our investment into that shop. So I couldn't tell you exactly what it was, but it was definitely you know, we weren't even negotiating with them. We were like, sorry, not now. And they just kept coming back with a little better offer.
Right.
And so, but it's just, the point is that we have some leverage. And then especially what I get a lot of now is, okay, so you have a cent, which, you know, it's happening all around America. They're remodeling centers. They're writing out leases. Okay. So I own the grocery store anchor, and we're putting in a $20 million remodel of the center. We're reskinning it. We're redoing the parking lot. We're putting lights in. We're doing everything. They got some brands in there that are like, hey, we're going to ride this lease out because we want to upgrade. We get calls for that. And we've been able to score on that end of it, that we were able to kind of come in behind a competitor. Maybe the shop is shut down for 4 to 5 months because we got to come in and do our work. We're able to save because, you know, the layout might be similar. We might be able to use the break room, the bathrooms. We just got to, you know, we got to do all the other things to the shops. And then all of a sudden, you know, next thing you know it, there used to be one of our competitors there, and people just walk up thinking they're getting a haircut. And it's like, oh, this is different. And then they come in and they're like, wow, this is amazing. So those opportunities are out there, and we are benefiting from those as well.
That's great. Well, it shows in your earnings claim. So let's jump into the item 19. I know this had to have really bothered all of you internally. 979, 21 grand away from kissing a million.
Right. Well, we're going to get, we were over that.
Okay.
We have been. We've dipped down a tiny bit, but we're going to get that back. I really believe in that. And I do think that's just more with the kind of the COVID hangover, honestly. But I do think that, you know, like some of the benefits that we're doing of, like we talked about, smaller shops we're building. We're working on, you know, better scheduling. We're working on able to recruit more people. And we're seeing our recruiting improving. And like I said, some of the things we talked about a little earlier about how we position ourselves, I think that will get better for us as well.
On that 979, which in haircutting is a very impressive average number, and this is disclosed in your FDD, just for the listeners, your EBITDA was 180,000. It's an 18% net to the bottom line. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That's a good number. That's a healthy. These are manager run businesses, right?
They sure are.
Right. I'm curious, is your manager a revenue producing manager, or no? They just manage, they do not cut.
Mostly they're revenue generating.
They are.
So
okay.
That's what
to like that. I like that.
Yeah. And I think it's really important that if it's a revenue generating, that is a person, you know, they need to be in the shop because they got to generate the revenue. I think that we have found in some of these bigger shops we have, if we have somebody that is not revenue generating, they're not in the shop enough, you know? And I think that the model we recommend to our franchisees, our partners, is that they, you know, that they go more that model. And we have plenty of examples to show where that is successful.
I love the fact that you're generating nearly $1 million in top line revenue with a fully managed business, fully burdened by labor, instead of saying, well, yeah, to get that number and to get that EBITDA, you know, a husband and wife bought the franchise. They're both cutting hair. Like, they're in the trenches. They're never going to scale to a second location. I also think it is a major bragging right, a feather in your cap, that you have a 30-unit multi-unit group. Like, that is not normal. Yep. It's just not a lot of brands can say that's a true testament to the scalability of your business, right? That replication. And multi-state. It's not like, well, they're all doing it in one city. No, they're not. They're doing it across three, four states. So I got to tell you, man, I like your model a lot. I think you did fill a void. You're to everyone. And I like that versus men only, women only, children only. I do like the model. We're coming up on time. Is there anything that you want to announce? Is there anything I didn't discuss that you think is important to know about the brand?
Well, let's just go back to the beginning a little bit. You were, you know, what was unique was that we were, you know, we have so many corporate shops and then our franchise. Now, what our strategy was is that actually pre-COVID, I know I talked a bunch about COVID here, but pre-COVID, we made a decision as a company. We looked around and we were like, okay, as we were expanding our footprint, we were like, okay, we were doing like, we were just looking at our shops holistically and we came to decisions like, look, bigger is not necessarily better here, you know? And then we were looking at some of our franchisees and we're like, you know what? It's magic there. What's the magic there? They have 10 shops in Orlando, our franchise group. They do a fantastic job, the Sleece. And it's like, what are they doing that their shop might feel a little different than ours? And our shop feels good. Don't get me wrong. It was the fact that they could connect on a different level than we could. And that's one of our biggest reasons that we are really focused on franchising now, is to find the right groups who can bring the energy into the shop and can be active in the shop, not cutting hair, not running the front desk. Hey, they're going to go in and help the front desk on that Saturday morning when it's busy as heck and they're jammed up. Yeah, they're going to go in and help out. You know, so we just found that the secret sauce of Floyd's is definitely have an ownership that they're a participant in the business. They're not a ghost. They're there. They're not there all day long, don't get me wrong, but they are active. They know their employees' names. They can give them a hug, a high five. That is a difference maker for us, because a lot of the stylists and barbers we get, they either work in a place where maybe the owner worked in it and they were causing a lot of the problems in the shop. The drama of the shop, having an owner in there all day long, or they worked someplace they didn't even know who their owner was. So we think it's really important to, you know, how we scale this. And we talk about the Dallas group. They have 30. Well, they have a big staff of people. They have, you know, they have a mini version of what we're doing. They work hard to be in the shops, that they can do those things that are very important. And I think that's the unique thing for us, is that we really have a connection with the shop. The vibe of our shop is top notch. So the stylists and barbers who work, I mean, not the stylists and barbers, but our franchise owners, they want to be there. They're proud to own it. It's like owning a mini nightclub that's right. Cool. It has that whole feel, that appeal to it.
Yeah, I encourage everyone listening to source out of Floyd's, go get a haircut. They'll know exactly what we're talking about when they walk in. It's got a very cool vibe inside. I mean, and it's amazing how you've been able, you know, when you go to like those, a business and there's license plates and stickers and just paraphernalia like everywhere all over the walls, you're like, how do you replicate this vibe? You guys have done it. It's really interesting how you've replicated that look and feel across the country. It's like those businesses that have been, it's like, we've been here since 1960. It's like, yeah, I could tell every corner of the wall is filled with some, you know, music album or something like that. You guys have been able to do it. I think it's very challenging to replicate that corporate store, the one that made the brand. And then, you know, look at like a Hard Rock Cafe, for example. Like that first one, it's like, man, look at this. Is that Led Zeppelin's outfit? Yeah. Is that his guitar? Is that the Who?
Right.
How do you replicate that? They did. They had a ton of money. They properly capitalized it and they kept replicating that model one cafe at a time. That's not probably a success story other than the replication of the look and feel of the interior of the store. I don't think it played out very well for them, but you get the point. What you've done is remarkable.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we like to do, it's like, let's just say you're not a big traveler. You live in your zip code. That's great. And you have a Floyd's there. You might think that's the only Floyd's, and that's okay, because it feels that way. It could be, you know, it feels very, feels very local, has a cool, edgy feel to it. I've had times where people were shocked that there were as many shops as they are, because it felt local. It felt fresh. And that's what you get with the ownership. That's the franchise. That's why I believe, and why our franchises are doing so well, is creating the local vibe, the local feel. Yeah, we're based out of Denver, but everybody works in that shop in Charlotte, North Carolina. They're not from Denver. They're from Charlotte.
Absolutely.
You know, and so we support that. And, you know, we're just really excited in the direction we're going. I just like to say that, like, when I look at our business right now, we have the founders, myself, my brother Bill, and my brother Rob, and my wife Karen, who is the president. The family is back to the root of the business. We're back running the business now, and we're not leaving. So we kind of, you know, when we got to, you know, probably about 15 years into the business, we were kind of slowly backing out of the business. Now we're back in it, and we're here to stay.
That's great. Good to hear. Yep. Love it. I've enjoyed my time with you. I've enjoyed learning a lot about your brand, the culture, everything going on behind the scenes. I appreciate you coming on and taking the time out to spend an hour with me.
You bet.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss out on more great content. And if you're considering investing in a franchise, whether it's the brand you feature today or another opportunity, we're here to help. Visit us at franocity.com. That's FRANOCITY.com. We love to help you take that next step towards business ownership.